The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch.
Glad to be back, Cindy.
As always, we have another spectacular content about being on the trail with the mules in the mountains. You know a lot about that because you live at the base of the mountain.
I find the mountains the best place to go riding. You know, in the desert, it can get a little hot during the summertime. In other places in the hills, it's nice, but there's nothing quite as majestic as mountains. And the Rockies are the best in the country, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So, with the hectic schedule of spring and summer slowly tapering into fall, thoughts of the cool, refreshing mountain streams and the sight of massive bull elk or the quiet majesty of the rugged mountain peaks on a relaxing trail ride, mountain hunt, or pack trip begin to ease their way into our minds.
Mm.
What better way to share your time with your mule or donkey? And what better place for him to show you what he was born to do? A mountain trail ride or a pack trip are both perfect ways for you to get to really know your long ears and strengthen the bond between. Mules are remarkably strong and durable animals, making them excellent mountain partners. The cup shape of their hooves allows them to track the rough mountain terrain with much more sure-footedness than their counterpart, the horse. The mule's superior intelligence and strong sense of survival help him to carefully negotiate the placement of his feet, ensuring the safest ride possible. This is both important and comforting to know when heading for the mountain. The mule's strength and endurance are sometimes unbelievable, but always dependable. On a hunting trip, he will take you through the rough mountain terrain for days and then pack out the elk of your dreams with the greatest of ease. Around the campfire, he's a wonderful companion on those lonesome mountain nights. His blatant curiosity can make for some fun and funny situations, and his loving ways will win your heart. But first and foremost, he's a reliable companion when the going gets tough. A few years ago, well, it's quite a few years now, I had some mule skinner friends that decided to take a hunting trip into the Rocky Mountains. This was in the fall, and packing in, the weather was beautiful, but you gotta know that the weather in the mountains can change in an instant. It can be beautiful when you ride out, but I even got caught in a hailstorm one time up the mountain and had to run down the trail, which took us about an hour and a half in pelting hail.
Oh, yeah.
But these guys, they rode up there. There were calm breezes and not a cloud in the sky.
Sure.
And after setting up their camp and tending to their horses and mules, the hunters went off to track elk. Hunting was good, but after a few days, the evening brought with it an unpredictable snowstorm of incredible intensity. The hunters crawled into their tents the next morning to discover that their camp was buried in more than 4 feet of snow.
Oh, my gosh.
And even having the animals tied up on a high line didn't really help because they were still knee-deep in snow. And with no chance of the storm lifting, the hunters packed up what they could on their horses and mules and quickly got underway. They had to leave a lot of gear behind. They left the campsite, and mind you, this was in the fall, and the snow deepened on their way down, and the terrain was steep and rocky and treacherous. They had only gone a short distance when the snow got too deep, and the horses refused to go any further. Anxiety was really high at that point because the hunters were worried they wouldn't make it off the mountain alive. But in the face of this great danger, my friend asked his trusty mule, Goliath, to break trail for the others. And with slow, careful, deliberate steps, this well-trained, loyal mule led them all down the mountain to safety. Once there, they freed their trucks and trailers, which were also buried in the snow, loaded up the animals, and made their way back to the lowlands to safety. The storms on the mountains worsened, and it was spring before they could get back and retrieve their gear. But they were eternally grateful to Goliath the Mule for leading them safely down the mountain.
Yay for Goliath.
I know, right?
I love it.
You know, you hear stories like this one where mules and donkeys have emerged as heroes in precarious situations
sure.
like this.
Yeah.
However, if you prefer not to take risks like my hunter friends, there are less daunting activities you can do with your mules and donkeys. You can take your long-eared companion along to the mountains for a hike or a picnic. he would thoroughly love just being with you in those beautiful surroundings. While you walk the trails, you can enjoy the marvels of nature. Your donkey or mule can carry the lunch essentials. While you enjoy the wildflowers or try your hand at fishing in a mountain stream, you can be confident that your long ears will enjoy the peaceful solitude and be able to stay out of serious trouble at the same time. If you question taking excursions such as this with your long ears because of a lack of training, there are fellow long ears lovers who can help you. And I strongly advise doing this kind of training. And it's not just desensitization. There are things that can just abruptly startle them. Wildlife can come out of the trees. There are all over the United States excellent mule trainers that are available to help beginners. A long ears lover once told me that his love for burros and mules began years ago when he found Dusty, a 3-year-old wild burro that was caught in a blizzard. He took her home, cared for her, and a year later, he entered her in the National Western Fall Classic and Mule Show, Donkey and Mule Show. And he and Dusty were awarded the title of Reserve Champion Donkey of the Show.
Cool.
These guys learn so thoroughly and so quickly when you show them things the right way and you don't get in a hurry. You know, like I've been talking about. And at the same time, you're cultivating a really deep relationship with them. And a lot of people like to think that they have a bond with their animal, but you don't really know what a bond is until you slow down and experience it firsthand, how deep that bond can actually go. And this guy that found Dusty, he was breaking and training wild Mustangs at his Medicine Bow stables. And he included free clinics for burro owners to teach them how to handle and care for their animals. Now, we're all fortunate to be able to share our time with such intelligent, tough, and durable equines as RV-loving mules. But you should also remember to do your part in the relationship. Like I was saying, be patient and willing to take the time to allow your relationship to grow and for training to become solid before you indulge in the challenges of trail riding. We all think it's just jump on and go and it's fun to be with our friends and all that. And we'll pack our cell phones with us with this idea that if we get in trouble, we can always call our way out of it. But, you know, a lot of times there's no service up there in the mountains.
Yeah.
So it's not always as safe as you might think. We tend to be a little bit naive about those kinds of things. I was actually reminded by Lance, my mule, on a hot summer day that sometimes I need his help and that he is willing to learn how to do that. Because I was having heat stroke and he came over to me and he goes, well, I think we better go back to the barn now. And he stuck his head right under my arm and picked me up. And so we went ahead and went back to the barn. But it also rang some bells in my head and I went, you know what? This might be a really good thing for him to learn solidly on how to help me. Say I, you know, got swept off of him somehow and fell off of him and broke my leg or my arm or something to the point where I couldn't get back on. So I actually spent some time teaching him how to drag me with my arm through the stirrup. And I just put my right arm through the stirrup on the left side, and I had my reins in my left hand, and I just told him, walk on. And, of course, he knew the verbal commands to everything, but he was just like, why are you riding down there?
<You
know?
laughs>
And I was just like, just walk on, Lance, will you? You know, you help me when I'm standing up. Let's try this, okay? You know, I'm laying on the ground. So what? You know, and he goes, well, whatever you want, Mom. You know, so he starts walking along. And I let him walk a few steps. And then I said, and whoa. And he turned around, looked at me, and I reached in my fanny pack. And he bent over, and I gave him his oats. And then he goes, oh, you really did want this, didn't you? And so he did learn to drag me from the stirrup. So it's really important that you plan ahead like that. You know, and if you know, your cell phone's not in service, this is a great way to have your mule drag you back down the trail and hopefully to somebody that can help you. Another thing that's important is to plan ahead and scout the locations where you want to ride. With the growth of urban populations, open areas that welcomed riders in the past are not as numerous as they once were. In a lot of these parks, they do allow hikers or bikers but not necessarily equines. So you know, if you're just going out and I want to go up in the woods, and you're driving along the road and you see a trailhead, the next sign you might see is no horses allowed.
Right.
And then you won't be able to go, and then you've wasted a whole lot of time. And this is particularly true when you want to have an overnight trip. You know, you want to make sure that you're going somewhere where they will accept equines and where you can camp. And so even a ride that's planned to be short, for instance, can turn into a challenge if the weather changes suddenly. So planning ahead is really, really important. Like I said, you want to know that they're going to accept equines on the trails that you're going to. But also be sure that you plan for the worst case scenario because of the change in the weather in the mountains. And tack up your equine in comfortable tack and equipment that fits like a glove. We've talked about that before when we were talking about fitting saddles. I like to ride with a crupper because it will hold the saddle in the if it's in the correct placement in the middle of their back, mm-hmm. when it's adjusted correctly. But the most important thing about that is it allows for full range of movement, particularly in the hindquarters when climbing uphill. Breaching will restrict them and actually put them in a position where they cannot extend those hind legs enough to push off up the hill. And if their legs are too close underneath, you can actually run the risk of them going over backwards because they can't extend that hind leg.
Right.
A lot of people like to ride with a breast collar, and if you do, it can be helpful going up hills, but the problem with those is you don't want it to be too tight. You just want it, you know, tight enough so the saddle doesn't slide back into the flank area. Okay, if you want to wear a breast collar, but in my experience, you don't necessarily need one. And I also like to put a nylon halter underneath my bridle with a lead rope on it and tie that around their neck like the cavalry guys used to do. You'd see these guys with halters under their bridles. This is where I learned it from, and a lead rope that is tied around their neck in a non-slip knot.
Right.
Then you have something if you need to stop and tie up and go do something. If somebody's having trouble with a girth that you're riding with or something, or you see something on the trail that needs to be picked up, you can untie that lead rope quickly, tie them to a tree, you know, and go do what you're going to do and come back. That's convenient, and it's also very practical. And you want to pack your saddlebags with the barest necessities for any ride far from home. You will probably need a compass, water, rain gear, a Swiss Army knife, a buck knife, and a hoof pick, a lighter, fence pliers, granola bars or trail mix, a sleeping bag, a warm coat, bear spray, and a first aid kit. With, at the very least, it's handy to have gauze, vet wrap, and Neosporin. You can get away with that. If you're planning an overnight trip, you'll probably need a pack mule or a horse to carry the extra food and additional necessities, sleeping bags, more food, extra clothes, high lines, and extra halters and ropes, and food for your equines. Lots of places will not let your equines graze in the parks, but some do. So you have to be careful. I don't like using picket lines where the equine is tied low with a halter or a rope around a foot. I don't like using hobbles either.
Right.
Mules can run off in hobbles.
Oh, yeah.
No problem. They are very good at that. And if you read the article, you can see a picture of my mule running off in hobbles. I was going to do a piece on hobbles and how to fit them and all of that until he did that. And then I decided that it's better just not even to do it.
Right. And he's so athletic.
They are. And you know, the other thing that he did that was so amazing was at first he was hopping like a rabbit. And then he slowed down and he started prancing and doing passage,
which
is a slow motion trot that they use in dressage. And he stopped and then he was still prancing in place. And I thought, well, at least I know now that when we get to that level, he'll be able to do it. You know? But we're not putting the piece about hobbles in here because that is just leading people astray.
Right.
You know, they'll be chasing their mules. And if they do go running through the trees and stuff, they can really get hurt. You know, they can get tangled up and sprain tendons, muscles, and ligaments. They can get severe rope burns that'll scar them for life. I had three mules that I picketed out on the road to eat the grass along the fence, and all three of them got a hind leg tangled up in the rope, and they got rope burns. And although Panalog was really good for getting them down to a minimum, those burns never went away, never grew hair. And so I thought, you know, I just don't like the idea of putting them around. And a lot of those Western trainers were teaching you how to rope their feet in a round pen, and I didn't really like that either. They said they'd, you know, you can teach them to lead by a foot and everything, but that doesn't mean they're not going to get a rope burn. And I like my animals looking clean.
Right.
I taught them good manners so they wouldn't even have bite marks on each other. And I used to yell at them if they would bite each other and tell them to be good little guys. And I'd space their food dishes and their hay 16 feet apart. And it really worked. They're all completely free of bite marks and things that they would get otherwise. And so I came to this conclusion that it makes more sense when you're going camping in the mountains to take a horse along. And you take a horse that they really like, you know. And that way what you can do is you can put up your high line and tie the horse to the high line. Now, there are some mules that will wander, so you want to tie them to the high line, too. They won't start fussing with it and trying to pull it down if the horse is there. But the rest of the mules that you have, you can go ahead and turn them loose. Let them run free. If you're in a place where they can graze, I might add. But don't leave the halters on them. Again, they could become tangled up and injure themselves if they start wandering through the trees and stuff. There's all kinds of stuff to get hung up on. So the other thing is if you've spent a lot of time doing your groundwork and building that relationship with your mules, they're much less likely to wander off and get loose. They will probably choose to be near you and participate in your around the campfire things. And you can find them kind of obnoxious about being there with you.
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, you kind of got to take it in stride. Now, there are some things that you need to be aware of when you're riding. I mean, I used to do this when I was younger, but I don't condone it anymore. We thought, oh, yeah, it'll be fun to go have a couple drinks and get on the trail and enjoy the scenery and everything. But I found out that my mules didn't like it when I had less sense than I should.
Yeah.
And so they made things really difficult for me, you know, and I had more trouble when I was drinking alcohol while we were riding the trail. And I finally made up my mind that maybe it was better to wait on the camping trip or at the end of the ride before we all got together and drank some beer or whatever,
you know,
make it an end of the day celebration kind of thing. And if you're camping overnight, by the next morning, you're acceptable to your mule again. So I strongly condone that. Being as our mountains are not as open and allow the wild animals up there very much territory anymore because of development. They have a lot of residential areas that go deep into the mountains, and I've noticed that it's driving the wild animals into the lowlands. I mean, you know, you hear about big cats stealing people's little dogs right out of their yards and stuff. When you're up in the mountains, you're right in their territory. So you have to be really, really careful, because if you come upon them when you're riding, they can end up being quite aggressive. And so, you know, I actually had a bull elk chase my buckskin horse and me back into the woods.
Wow.
He thought she was a female elk, you know. So, you know, you need to keep this in mind that these animals are going to be aggressive.
Sure.
If you're going to do any hunting, you got to make sure you've got licenses and that you're in the areas where it's approved to go hunting. When you're up there, you want to wear bright colors, particularly orange, so that any hunters can see you easily. But also be aware that there are hunters up there that are unskilled and that will pop off a shot if they see something move, which could be your mule. That has happened, and to a couple of my friends, their animals have been shot. Not fatally shot, but nevertheless, they got shot. So it's not as safe as it used to be. because we just got too many people and too many people that are very naive about the skills you need to be riding in the mountains. When you go to the mountains and you're going to be staying overnight, if you can, choose a place where you can establish a base camp and where you can park your truck and trailer. This would be safer than riding up and then just totally camping up in the rough, because then you can put your animals on a high line during the evening, you know, while you're around the campfire. And if you have an obnoxious mule, you have a place to tie him up where he won't cause too much trouble.
There you go.
And then you can put him back in the trailer for the night. And if you're in an area where you've got large predators, this might be a better alternative. And stock trailers, I have found, make a better trailer to take up into the mountains because they're fully enclosed. A lot of the trailers these days have windows, and people would be compelled to drop those windows and leave them open. But if the animals can get their head out of them, then the predators can get in.
Sure.
So you don't want to leave them sitting ducks in the trailer anyway. And if you're camping overnight, you should know that any food can be attractive to predators, and it should be mounted high in a tree and at least 50 to 100 yards away from your camp and your equine. So getting the proper in-depth training for your donkey or mule can only enhance your relationship with them, and in turn, they will enrich your life. This year, why not take time to really get to know your remarkable animals by letting them share in the fun, be it hiking, hunting, packing, or picnicking? The life you enhance might be your own.
You bet. So, Meredith, what about acclimating your stock when you go up into the mountains? Because there are some people coming from the Midwest or from the South, you know, and so what are your recommendations on that?
Well, again, it's got to do with that training that you're doing, because that will build up their core, builds up their respiratory system as well. When you're doing the core strength training that I describe, you're actually teaching them not only to be in good posture, but you're enhancing the internal organs, and that includes the lungs. And they will learn to breathe deeper and take in more oxygen. And when you're up in the mountains, we ride anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 feet. And the air gets thinner up there, and it's more important that they inhale more oxygen. And when you train them properly with the core, one of the things you'll notice is that their nostrils, if they start out very narrow, pretty soon you'll notice that your animals are flaring their nostrils and taking in more air. And one of the things that I do once we get under saddle is, and I did this in combined training, our hay field is about a mile all the way around. And so I will start out by trotting this hay field and going only as far as they can do easily with each lesson, and then gradually increasing it. And as I increase it, it puts more strain on them. They have to breathe deeper like anybody that's running faster. And then pretty soon, when they can do that whole mile at the trot, then I will trot the whole mile and start cantering as far as they can. Pretty soon, I'm doing 2 miles. I'm doing the first mile at the trot, then I'm doing the second mile at the canter. And then I will go for a third mile. I will trot 1 mile, canter 2 miles. And when you do this in your lessons at home on the flat ground, it's just like a person who is increasing the distances that they can run. And they don't start out by just running the whole thing. You know, you'll start out by jogging for a while, and then walking for a while, and then jogging some more, and varying that routine. But what that does is that builds up your internal organs to function properly and take in enough air to subsist your body, to make it be able to go farther. And when you do that, and you take your animals up into the mountains, they're ready to go ahead and take in that decrease of oxygen as they climb higher into the mountains. But you need to have some good sense about it when you're up there, too. And watch your animal, see how he's breathing. And if he's been climbing and you've been doing a lot of trotting and loping through there, which you can do on the straight parts of the trail, you might want to just slow down sometimes and just walk a little bit of it, and then trot a little bit of it. And then in the straight places and the flatter places where you can see where you're going and what's coming around the corner, then you might be able to lope out a little bit, but then only make it a little bit. Don't make it a harsh, steady, fast mountain climb because you're running out of time.
Right.
If you're running out of time, make the trail shorter.
There you go. And what about if you're going to be in the mountains for a few days, electrolytes?
I never fed anything but water to my animals.
Really?
If they needed electrolytes and they were a little lethargic when they got home, then I would just have the vet out and say, what do you think? We need to give them any? And 9 times out of 10, we didn't. They just needed some rest.
Okay.
But then, see, it just comes back to being sensible about the way you're negotiating your trails.
Sure.
And your days.
Okay.
You know, because they're not going to, if you run them out like that and they're sweating profusely, which brings me to another thing, if they're fed properly, and I recommend the crimped oats with the Shogo vitamins, one-a-day vitamins, and Missoula corn oil, only a cup and a half to 2 cups a day, fed once in the evening, and grass hay, what I noticed first and foremost was the way they sweat. When I was feeding all these other feeds that were supposed to be so good for them, there were two things that I noticed. When they sweat, from going a long ways, the sweat was foamy and yellow.
Yeah.
And that told me they were sweating toxins.
Oh, sure.
And when I went to the oats and the grass hay in the mix that I have, the sweat ran clear. Didn't do that anymore.
Hmm. Well, that's good.
And they did not get hyper on it. And
yeah.
They didn't start sweating too soon. 9 times out of 10, when I was doing the mountain climbing and trail stuff all day long, I just slowed down and everything so that they really didn't sweat at all. They got heated up. They never got sweaty. And the other thing is when they were getting foamy like that, getting that yellow stuff, they stunk.
Oh, yeah.
They did not smell good. But when I put them on this program, they don't stink anymore. When they sweat, it's just clear liquid.
Sure.
And if they do get foamy around like a breast collar or a breeching or something, it's white. It's not yellow.
Well, that's very good to know. Meredith, you have been remarkable as always on Mule Talk. So,
well, it's lunchtime.
It is. You have a great rest of the day, Cindy.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com. Don't forget, hit the subscribe button.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.